taking the slow road to Scotland is what Alison is planning to do. And we kind of took a slow road in this conversation overall, talking about travels, talking about being busy, about my sense of being so home here in my home and really not having any inclination or desire to go anywhere else. And we speak about something that came up for me yesterday in a therapy session about wanting and having and how you can experience that on different levels. And on the deep level, I want and I have. It's kind of like inhaling, exhaling. You need both of them, otherwise it just won't work. That might sound really, really cryptic, but I think if you listen, you'll get what we're speaking about. So join us for an hour and a half of meandering conversation.
It's been ages.
It's like 3 weeks or something since we last talked.
Well, my volume's right down. That's better. It's all looking different. There must be a... must have a new version of Zoom or something.
Or something. I'm wet in the hair. I was thinking about that. That's what I do when I speak to you. You know, I've come from today. I just came from the shower, but I'm so wet hair. I didn't feel like blow drying it.
Oh, so is it warm?
Yeah, warm enough for that. Yeah.
You have a big ball.
I do. It's like one of those Pilates ball. I got it. Somebody was giving it away for free. And I thought, oh, that would be great to sit here at my table and sit on that one. But it doesn't have enough air in it. So I sit too far down and I've tried to pump it and I cannot get it to work. So now it's just basically there.
Oh.
But, you know.
Because it's quite amusing being on Zoom calls with people who are sitting on balls.
You can get kind of seasick if you're prone to that, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
But
I remember taking Murdoch to a vet when he was a tiny puppy. I found a homeopathic vet and he was very memorable, but most memorable because he had a big blue ball that he sort of bounced. He reflected his energy. He was just all bouncy, and then he sort of scooted around the room on his ball, on bouncing. His
ball. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is a great thing. This the things that help us stay in motion, they are good. You know, it's like we do. Modern man sits still too much, or am still too much, because, you know, standing desks in you know, it's perfectly fine, but to stand all day, just as you would be sitting all day in front of a desk, it's not good for you either. It's the movement we need. It's not the staying in one place, stillness we need. It's like that's what we need to get away from.
Yeah, I feel like, bye, I'm off.
This is a short call. Let's do the walk instead. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's easy to fall. It's easy to fall into that. And then you kind of relax by plonking down on the sofa, right? Being as still. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. I'm thinking I want a ball.
You can get mine.
I did have a grey one. Don't know where that went. Somewhere. But it was, yeah, it's fascinating to have to, because to sit on a ball, you have to use your body. You can't, like sitting on a chair.
Yeah.
It supports me everywhere. I can just flop. And
precisely. You have to be your own support in a sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And probably that core, the core thing.
Yeah.
We should have strength in our core.
I also have my little red ball, which is one of those. No, I don't sit on this one. Maybe I should. I don't. It's one of those solid rubber balls. So it's like heavy, but I keep it on the floor. So I'm actually sitting really far out on my chair because this is my, you know, this is my dining table. So I just have like ordinary chairs. Right. So I sit at the end of the chair so that just my bum and not my thighs are on the chair. And then I have this ball that I engage my feet with. So I'm like rolling the ball with my feet. So there's a little bit of movement that's kind of below the surface of the table, and you know. Underneath, there is movement.
Yeah. Oh. So what have you been up to? Where have you been? What have you been?
I've been about, which is so weird for me, right? Because it's like, I don't want to be about. I just want to be here. So first week of August, I spent at my mom's place, which is an hour by car away. So it's not far, but it's not here, right?
That's the last time we spoke, wasn't
that's
it?
That's the last time we spoke, precisely. And then I got home and I had a week of slowly getting into work again. And then this week, Monday, Tuesday, I was in Uddevalla, which is 4 hours by car that way. North, for work with colleagues. And we had a blast, but it's, you know, hotel and traveling in car and being professional or trying to be professional, you know, all of that stuff. And then Wednesday, then I got home again Tuesday quite early. So afternoon, like 4 or 5 or something, we were home. So it wasn't late. But then Wednesday and Friday, I've been at one of my like permanent clients is a food and pharmaceutical contract packager, and they reside an hour by bus from here. So I had to be there. I was there Wednesday all day working, and then Friday, there was an audit by an auditor. So I was there all day, you know, Wednesday and Friday, and I had to do the bus thing. And then Thursday, I had a long meeting in town. So I wasn't home Thursday either. And it's just, oh my God. I want to be home. And next week is kind of the same. So, or almost. Monday, it's the audit again. So I have to be there at 8 because that's when we start. So I have to get on the bus at 6:50. So, you know, my morning of waking up around 6, that's fine. But then I usually kind of you know, hang around in bed for a couple of hours reading and writing and stuff. That won't work. Tuesday, meeting in town. Wednesday, possibly nothing. Except maybe a lunch meeting, but that's fine. That's a date. And then Thursday, I'm going to Denmark.
Oh, foreign girl.
Foreign country. I have, and it's like, ah, Jesus. Because it's a full-day training, and it's a training that's been postponed since March of last year for understandable reasons, but it looks as if it's going to be. And then I have to, you know, get some type of proof that I'm not sick and I don't know everything. So it's like, I'm thinking I'll borrow a car so I don't have to do the bus and train and bus thing, but rather easier. And Friday, I'm going to play at Caspian's. You know, we play office, me and Caspian, on Fridays normally. So it's like, how did I plan this? Yeah. Really bad ramp up, going full on in ways that I really don't do anymore. Because I don't have a problem working. You know, it's like, I kind of like working, but I have gotten used to my mornings in bed. So if things start before 9, you know, I don't get my mornings in bed.
So how's it looking going forward then after next week?
It's more chill. But you kind of don't know. But I like that too. But it's more chill. I think it is these 2 weeks that are just, it just, you know, everything ramping up after vacation and stuff. So I think I will be able to squeeze in more of my nothing before 9 o'clock days, at least, which is good. Because Caspian actually helped me realize this. Those hours in bed in the morning for me, I think, is what most people take on the couch in the evenings.
Right.
You know, it's this, you kind of chill, you don't really do anything unless you want to do something, then you do something, you know, you watch something or read something or write something. You know, it's like, so it's, that's kind of what those mornings are, because I can sit on the sofa in the evenings for sure, but a lot of times I'm kind of working, you know, I'm processing and emailing and in the swing of things. So My mornings are my evenings, if that makes sense. Yeah. Well, you know.
Yeah. Well, it sounds good that you've had to miss your mornings for you to notice how important your mornings are.
Yeah. Really important. And I mean, it's just a year ago. I think it was in September, October last year that I really honed in on them. Because I'm also Miss Flexible, so I have, you know, it's like if somebody says, oh, I can only do an early morning coach walk, I'm going, okay, fine. Or I used to. Now, you know, it's like I don't suggest that. I don't suggest anything between 7 and 9 in the mornings anymore. I used to. So honing in on the fact that they are important for me and that I don't have to offer them up. If there's a need, I'm in, right? But I don't have to offer it up to start with.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's like it's good to kind of get those. I had a therapy session yesterday with Dominic because my Mondays have been walking this weekend, next week. So, and we spoke about fixed points. And I think this is one of those fixed points where it's good for me. It's, you know, it's like it's something that I can kind of navigate around, knowing that if I have this, you know, I can do a lot more. I can do many other things, you know. Then I can be really flexible the rest of the day if I have this time to myself. In a sense.
And even knowing, like you're saying about not being at home, that that's another fixed point of,
yeah,
you know, that's where you want to be.
Yeah, I do want to be here. I love here, which is interesting. I had when I was at my mom's place, I met up with one of my dear friends who lives just a couple of kilometers from my mom. And we went for a walk with her dog one evening. And she's just lived where she's living now for a year. They moved in last summer. And, you know, she really loves it there. And she's like going everywhere. And I'm like, I don't wanna. I don't even wanna be here. I wanna be at home. And she looked at me and she said, yeah, but it's like, I know few people who are so at home in their home, but you are. And I went, oh, yes, that felt so good. Because it kind of is. I am so home here. Mm. You know, I'm just so, I have everything I need here, except maybe the ocean. But it's 10 kilometers that way. I can do that when I want to. But I am very much at home here. Which is interesting, speaking to you.
Mm.
But I honestly, I don't think I've ever been so at home anywhere else. And I mean, you know, the spiritual yada yada, I fall into that too. It's like, yes, home is here. It's inside of me. It's, you know, I can bring home with me wherever I go. Yeah, sure. Absolutely, fully. I just don't want to go anywhere. Right? I mean, that's really the difference for me. For me now and for me from 3 years ago and back.
Mm.
Then I kind of wanted to go places. I don't want to go anywhere. Which is so odd. In a world where everybody goes everywhere and wants to. You know, it's like, is this yet another one of those, yeah, I'm really born in the wrong century type things, because I kind of have that thought now and again for various reasons. It's like, you know, in the old days, you know, you were lucky if you went a couple of tens of kilometers to the bigger city, right?
So I'm sure there's still some people who don't go places.
I'm not alone, you mean?
Yeah. And especially the last 18 months.
Yeah.
So, and it's interesting seeing how people are, I suppose there's a whole mix, that there's seem to be a lot of people who are desperate to travel, and no matter what the inconvenience or the cost of testing or all of those things, they have to go abroad. And otherwise it's not a holiday, and, or whatever else, or other reason, which, yeah, I have no desire to travel on a plane. But then, yeah, when I think about people that I know, I'd love to go and meet up with some people that I know, but I'm not in any hurry to do that. And I'm, I don't know, it's, yeah, interesting, the home thing. I keep thinking about, well, yeah, when I have my own home again. But yeah, I just don't know where that will be or when that will be. And that's fine. Occasionally I feel pressure that I should.
Is that outside pressure?
Yeah. And maybe internal pressure that I should be doing what the external pressure is telling me is normal. Yeah, but I'm... And yeah, interested about staying, not needing to go anywhere, because I can go anywhere. I have a camper van. I am planning that I will. But I was just reading a very nice book that I've got that is Take the Slow Road to Scotland.
Oh, that sounds like something for me. That's the only thing that is kind of in my peripheral vision. Someday I want to just do Scotland on my own with no plans, just, you know, train or bus or bike or walk or maybe renting a car. But, you know, just so.
Yeah. And it is, I've just reading the beginning of it. It's like, yeah, oh yeah, this is the book for me to read. And I don't know how I came upon it, but I did. And it's got various routes and they're very slow. But then even reading that, I say, oh, really?
Do I really want to?
Because Scotland's huge. It's huge.
It is quite huge, isn't it? If you sort of lengthwise.
Yeah, right? There's sort of the civilization.
And then there's the rest, yeah.
And then there's the rest. And yeah, so I will go because I need, much like you getting sort of thrown back into work and doing something that is different to what you have been doing. Well, yeah, I need to go because I've wanted to go, but I am noticing that, yeah, it's a lack of energy. I still don't have much energy. So it's then, oh, how do I do this? Which is why the slow road appeals. Because I've seen people posting about doing the North Coast 500. Oh, yes, I did it in 4 days.
400 miles or what?
500 miles on single track Scottish roads.
How fast can we do it?
Yes, we did it the fastest. What was the point of that?
Is there anybody competing for doing it the slowest?
They can't even bother to tell anybody that they are. Yeah. And I was thinking about the times I've spent in my van, that if I find somewhere that I like, I just stop. And last September, I ended up on a campsite in Wales and had booked 2 nights. After the first night, I just wanted to leave because it felt like I was in a car park, and then discovered that there was another field which had one caravan in it and views of the countryside, and checked if I could move there, thinking there must be some reason why there's nobody there. And apparently people like to be with people. So they like to park their motorhomes and caravans next to each other.
Next to everybody else, yeah.
That feels right to them. So I was the weirdo who went and parked alone in a field. And I stayed 9 days.
I remember that because we had a Zoom, or at least one Zoom from there.
Yeah.
It was a green field just outside of your...
Yeah, there was a huge field that Murdoch could be off the lead in, and which was useful because the the footpaths, there's a good network of footpaths nearby, but there was no way of getting a dog over the very high stiles and fences. There was, because often there'll be a gap underneath that a dog can go through, but these were all sheep-proof fences. And I had to lift him over one, but it wasn't good. And when they've got barbed wire,
he's a big dog too. I mean, he's not a big dog, but he's not a small dog.
No, he's not one to be lifted up and
above easily my head. But I was speaking to somebody the other day about this, about not wanting to go anywhere. It's like, especially the last year, it's as if I've been traveling so much within, right? Mm. I have been exploring so much. It's like, I've been helped to do that by the fact that the world kind of around, the universe around has shrunk. COVID and this and that. And, you know, it's like, so it's been possible to do all this extensive within travels.
Mm.
And I was sitting in bed writing from yesterday's session with Dominic, and that document that I'm writing is, that I'm calling the depth, is, that's my deep dive into shame document. First entry was August 22nd, 2020, and today is August 22nd, 2021. So 115,000 words later.
Wow.
Yeah. There's a lot there. There is a lot there.
And is there more? Is there more to come?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not done with this. It keeps on being it's like, It doesn't end. The universe is within. Just don't end. It's like there is new doors opening. Most sessions. I wrote a piece in 2016 or 15 or something. When 16 it must have been. When me and Dominic had a session over there on the couch, I was sitting there and he was sitting next to me, and and that was one of those mind-blowing experiences that I wrote about. And I sent that text to somebody the other day, and they said, "Oh my God, what an experience." And I'm going, "Yeah, tell me about it." And I'm like 40 sessions in, no, not 40, 30 something sessions in, maybe 35 sessions in, you know, since this past year.
Mm.
Which is, not all of them are this mind-blowing, weird experiences, but a lot of them have that, at least in part, and some have been like, you know, 100 times more mind-blowing. So it's like it's really been. So I was reflecting on that when he asked me about that session, just thinking about, wow. And I've written about not all of these sessions, but many of them, or I haven't written about the sessions. I've written kind of what was there.
Will you do something with it?
I think I will, but I want to kind of finish the project first, or that journey or whatever. It's like I want to come to some type of close.
Yeah,
I don't really know that. That's the thing. I don't really know how I will come to a close. But maybe I'll know when I get there. You know?
So is there somewhere that you were trying to get to? What was the intention at the beginning?
The intention at the beginning was I see life as levels and a spiral. So you kind of, you know, you start at one level and then you spiral around. And then when you've kind of learned the lessons of that level, you spiral up, right? And then when you've learned the lessons of this spiral, you spiral up, you go up. It's like a helix, those, you know. And which also means that what happens, you know, experiences you have, childbirth and marriage and divorce and, you know, moving and new jobs and deaths, right? You know, it's like all of those, they are kind of at the same point, but depending on how far I've come in my levels, there's a different perspective on that point, right? If I'm in it, I'm in it. The perspective is really in your face. You're in it, right? You level up once, you get a little bit of distance. You'll work something other than when you're in it inside of you. And then, you know, so you can have these things. Well, I've worked through my divorce, you know, my first divorce X times on different levels. Yeah, but you won't be finished because you'll always have that. Right? It's always there, right? Maybe after X levels, it's not the acute one. It's not an interesting one anymore, you know. But whenever you look back at one of these events, you will have a different perspective. So I think I've been working quite a lot with myself, especially since I separated and divorced last time, which is soon, precisely 5 years ago. That was in October of 2016, right? So I've been working on a lot of myself and my relation to these different events in life and stuff. And I had a very, very strong sense that I have been circling the big boss, the final boss on this level, which is shame. I've been circling, kind of seeing, yeah, I know you're over there. I'm not ready. I'm not done. You know, there's minor bosses around that I need to kind of work at first. And then last summer, a couple of different things happened that just made me see that I don't have any minor bosses left on this level. It's just the big boss. It's just shame. It's like, okay, you know, it's time. It's this is it. It's because I don't want to be stuck in this level. You know, it's like I wanna keep on leveling because it's fun. I enjoy it a lot. So I would say that's my goal. To work through with this, the shame in such a way that I can level up It will not be finished. I won't say, ah, yeah, done the same thing. Don't have to bother about that one again. No, it will probably be the big boss on the next level too, and the level after that, right? But I haven't ever done the work with it the way that I'm doing now. Like, not ever. So I guess there's maybe that's the close. Maybe it is this sense of, okay, now I've done the full, you know, the full lap on this level. I've looked at it from all the angles, above, beneath, below, you know, it's like from the side and standing inside of it and standing really close and going a little bit away. You know, it's like I think when I've worked it.
So do you have a sense of how it will feel when you've worked it to that point? Is there something that you're looking for?
Well, I have a sense of what that will feel. And I've been kind of getting tasting little bits of it, of that sense, which is this, for me, my shame is centered on intimate settings of saying what I want and what I don't want. You know, I've phrased it as, I want to say yes when I'm a yes, and I want to say no when I'm a no. I don't want to say yes when I'm a no. And I really don't want to say no when I'm a yes, right? It's like, so I think, and I've been experiencing little snippets of this where I have said yes when I'm a yes, where I have said no when I'm a no. So I think that's the, when kind of the, you know, it's like a scale. If this is not saying, you know, saying yes when I'm no and saying no when I'm yes fully, and this is saying yes when I'm yes and saying no when I'm no, it's like if I'm coming closer towards the yes, yes, no, no end of that. And I'm guessing when it isn't my instinct or habit, maybe that's a better word, like when it isn't my habit to fall into the yes, no, no, yes camp, then I think I'm kind of, okay, yeah, then. Because when I've shifted that, when it's like, okay, I'm prone to say yes when I'm yes, I'm prone to say no when I'm no, I think that might be one marker for this. Mm. Yeah.
So in order to know that, you have to be doing it, not it just being a theoretical on paper
exercise. Which is why the Badoo, yes. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's... That is, I have experienced that too. The in the flesh, yeses and noes, kind of fewer than my than the theoretical ones, and fewer than the online ones, which are they are. I'm getting there in the online interactions. That's easier for me. Also, mainly because, and you know, I haven't fallen in love yet again, right? So I haven't had that, because that's kind of the thing, I think. what has kept me from saying yes when I'm yes and from saying no when I'm no is my fears of being judged and discarded or ridiculed or deemed insignificant or, you know, just a bother, a nuisance, kind of all of those things, which if, you know, just Joe Smith on the street were to deem me any of those, it's like I couldn't care less, right? But the closer people are to me, the more meaning they make in my mind, the more meaning I put on people.
Yeah.
That fear just starts to rise up and say, oh shit, you know, tone it down. Do what you think they want you to do. It's like, no, I don't want to do that anymore. I want to do what I want to do, what I need to do, what comes from me.
Yeah, interesting. So it's made me think of somebody I'm working with about her business and her reluctance to say who she's not for. But the more we worked on it, the more powerful it became and the happier she was to be able to say it. And yeah, that seems to fit with the saying yes when I mean yes and no when I mean no. That,
yeah.
And it was interesting hearing the language that, and it changed as we worked through it, that I'm probably not for you. I'm not for you. Exactly. And it was just hearing that, it just felt so powerful. It's like, that I need to know that. I need to know that to make a decision about whether I choose to work with you or if I choose not to. But I need to know. It just, yeah, felt so much more impactful to know who she's not for. Because there's no, because it was when there was sort of the, oh, I'm probably not for you. There's a bit of me, because she is for me. She's very much, she aligns with my values and all of that stuff. But there's this bit that is, oh, well, you're saying that, but maybe you would go, you'd work like that with them, which means that you're not for me. But by her being very definite about who she's not for, then that makes me feel safer that she is for me. So it is, yeah, so much around clarity that it is not, because it can appear really selfish to be saying this is what I want, or this is my yes and this is my no. And it's like, but what about other people? What you might be upsetting people and all of that stuff. But actually when people have clarity and they know that they can trust what somebody says, they mean what they say, and they'll stand by it. You might not agree with it, but it's very, it sort of has solidity, doesn't it? That you know,
yeah,
you can trust it. And it's where it's sort of the wishy-washy.
Yeah, so that's why my friend Pernilla says tydlighet är snällhet, which in English turns into clarity is kindness. Mm. You know, the clearer I am, the kinder I am, because you don't have to be in the wishy-washy place. You don't have to think, is she, isn't she, maybe, maybe not. You know, it's like, no, it's like, okay, yes or no.
Mm.
Which might be one of the few times when I actually cannot go with my usual spiel. I usually say it's not either or, it's both and. But precisely here, I think it actually is an either or. If you have that type of, you know, if your service is one of those things, it's like, yes, this is, I'm for you if this. I'm not for you if that.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because yesterday Dominic told me, have you studied formal logic? And I said, no, I've never studied formal logic. And it sounds really fucking boring. And the only university course I've ever flunked is a summer course in programming that I took that I just didn't finish because it was just, I just could not get it to work. I've spoken about that with Frank, but it is, you know, if A and B, then C. Okay, so if A and D, no, not C. It's like, but if A and B and D, no, not C. You know, it's like, so I'm actually thinking that I'm gonna look into some formal logic and see what I can find there, because it seems it's interesting because we are not rational people, right? Like, that's why it's interesting, because that will be the tankespian, right? It's like, okay, you can have this rational, fully logical sequence. That is not what humans do, even though we claim to be really rational. It's like, no, you can find sort of the logical flaws in whatever action you take.
There's a good book.
You have a good book.
A good book called, I need to put my glasses on because it's right over there. Predictably Irrational.
Predictably Irrational, thank you.
Yeah, and it's all about that thing that we think we're rational, but we're not. And it's sort of it must have been recommended on the marketing seminar, but it's just fascinating. I loved it. I might have to read it again. But it is sort of, oh well, this is sort of predictable what humans would do, and then they don't.
Yeah, we don't. And there was another thing that I was thinking when you were speaking about this yesterday with Dominic. We spoke about wanting. He said, I want, and he looked at me, and I went, oh, it's so fascinating, because my last session with Gary, he prodded me, because he also saw this I want thing. He's like, there's something there. So he was just noodling and asking questions, and, you know, it's like, finally we got to this piece of I want, which had me write a blog post about wanting and how we kind of am in a society where it's okay to want material things. It's okay to want a bigger car, a bigger house, a larger pool, whatever it is, you know, a longer vacation and fancier places, bigger hotels, you know. But wanting love or a relationship or connection, or, you know, it's like, no. You're just clingy and needy, and you need to practice some self-love so that you can get out of that space. But the other thing is okay, right? But when Dominic said, I want yesterday, it's like it dances with I have. Right? I want and I have and I want and I have. It's like inhalation and exhalation. You cannot have just the one. It just doesn't work. You know, if you only inhale, yeah, sorry, dude, you're going to blow your lungs. You know, you won't live. You're only exhaling. Sorry, dude, you're going to die. No oxygen, right? It's like you need the dance. So that was one thing. And on that level, on that deep level of the wanting, and I have, I want, and I have. You know, I can go out to my mulberry tree that is now filled with ripe mulberries, and they are so delicious. And if I'm in this place of I want and I have, I'll take one and carefully get it off the branch, because they can just explode in your hand and just juice you up. And I put it in my mouth, and it's just, you know, wow, there. I can also be on the surface level of this, which is I have to give me more, right? I pick a full jar of them and I just eat them, you know, from this I have to, which is something completely different than the I want and I have.
Ooh.
Right? I have to, or I must not, you know. It's kind of the same. It's the same current, it's the same battery, but it's a totally different experience. Same, you know, same mulberry going into my mouth. Totally different experience.
Yeah, because the I have, when you speak about it like that, is an appreciation, a gratitude.
Yes.
That
it's there.
Yeah. And the, I know when you're talking about the wanting and all of the things that we are meant to want, I just have an allergic reaction to it. And when I see, I don't know, there seem to be an awful lot of very large cars around here, enormous cars, and I just have this reaction to like, well, what's the point of that? Why? And I would rather go and sit under a tree. And I'm, yeah, and the appreciation, yeah, the wanting. And because when I was asked, what is it that Alison wants, a few years ago, I was, I have, what? How? I don't even. Yeah, couldn't even understand the question that I could want something. That it was always about other people, about my husband or my children, or yeah. And then it was the point, well, all that's left is me. What do I want? And I suppose that fits in with the. That way of looking at what we want as being material stuff. So I didn't want to want material things, but then, interesting, the shame around admitting to wanting anything else, that's not okay to say that I want love, I want companionship, or yeah. But I like that I want, I have, that just, yeah, really felt the gratitude in the I have, and not a, it's not a sort of a greed of, I just, my judgment, and I accept that I'm being very judgmental about these people who are driving big cars. And yeah, I've got them judged as they're shallow, and they're just fueled by consumerism and money. I don't know that about them, but
no. But I mean, it is this sense on this deeper level of I want and I have. It is, like you say, that is the field of abundance. That is where it's at. Right, this shallower, I have to, I need to, I must not, is the field of lack.
Yeah.
Right, it's like give me. That's where the cravings and the insatiability and the sort of the desperate need for give me more, fill me up, as if that can fill anybody up, and it doesn't.
Yeah.
Right? You're trying to fill up a void that cannot be filled up with the things that you're trying to fill it up with.
Yeah, because people are never satisfied with however much, like they've got a nice house. It's like, no, I need a bigger house, or no, I need a bigger car. Yeah. No, my holiday isn't long enough or exotic enough.
Yeah. But it's interesting. This summer I've been talking to a few people about me not having a car, right? Mm. So me and my ex, we had two cars, and then we got rid of the one, and then we just had the one car. And then a year or two before we split up, we got rid of that car too. So I think 2015, the summer of 2015, I think it could have been 2014. But so basically six years of no car. And I love it. Oh, man, it's just the best. Because I don't have to bother. I don't have to wash it. I don't have to fill it up with gas. I don't have to do service and winter tires and summer tires and repairs. And, oh, it is so lovely to not have a car. And people look at me as if I'm absolutely bonkers. But the freedom. And I'm going, no, for me, not having a car, that's the freedom, right? That is really the freedom. It's like, if I need a car, I have friends I can ask, or I can rent one. You know, issue solved.
Yeah.
When I need a car, and I don't need a car often. Thursday next week, yeah, I might borrow a car, see if I can get one from one of my friends. If I can't, well, there's public transport. I can do that too.
Yeah. Because there is, you saying that has made me sort of think about people, thinking of someone in particular who you had to have a car for all of his children, two of which didn't live with him. And so the occasions when they all went in this car were very few, but the idea that it goes to so many other things, that we have to have that thing for ourselves, we have to have our own one, and
we and might there is it. That have to I have to I have to, and then you're on that level, right?
Yeah. And that we might use it to its full capacity a few times. And I'm thinking about my camper van, that it has been unusual circumstances, but I really haven't used it. But then I haven't been driving it. I use it once a week to go to the supermarket, which is, I don't know how, it's about 8 miles away. But other than that, I don't use it. And so I am going to Scotland, and I am going to use it. and I will, make a decision at some point about whether it is something that I need to have, my own one-off, or, there's various schemes for renting them out, to sharing them with other people. It gets very complicated with insurance and things like that. It is that idea of what we have to have our own, and what I've learned about not having my own home is that I don't have to have my own home in order to be at home, because that, as you said earlier, it's just like, home is within me. Mm. And that was such a revelation, that I could be in an amazing location in Wales and I didn't need to own it. I didn't need to be paying rent. I was working to earn my keep. But it was, realizing that we can share. It just seems so fundamental that there is plenty to go around. If only we were more willing to share what we have. and not just like, meet me, it's mine, it's mine. You go and you have to.
I have to have this.
Yeah, and you have to go and work hard. This stuff about, oh, well, you deserve it because you've worked hard. It's like, yeah, that just annoys me. There's on so many levels about who's judging, like, why do you only deserve something because you worked hard, and who's saying that you worked hard whereas someone else didn't work hard, and how? So it's, yeah,
I got into a little bit of a back and forth on Twitter the other day about doing gentle versus doing harsh. And I was saying, you know, you have to do gentle. That's, you know, and I actually wrote, I wonder if I should say have to. I usually never do. But yeah, I will. You have to do gentle for self-introspection to actually cause any lasting change. And this other person went, no, I have to do harsh. That's the only way I do it. And I'm going, yeah. And I'm thinking, I'm not so sure about that. Because I'm not so sure about short term, sure, you can push yourself, you know? But for me, that's the edge. It's not, it doesn't have to be the basis of it. But is it regenerative over time? You know, does it nourish you? Does it? But it's like, fine, we're, you know, let's do different. I'm into different, so sure thing. But I also think that there is so much more of the, you have to work hard, you have to, you know, there's efforting to be done and all of that. That is so much more out there. Just like the materialistic wants are out there and okayed.
And you deserve them if you work hard.
Yeah, precisely. Whereas if, you know, if you rest or you just enjoy nature or you sit under that tree and just, you know, you just are. Nah, that's not what we're kind of pushing for. But, yeah.
Because this is then, well, what is the point? And it's like, what? Where are we trying to get to other than just sitting under the tree and being at home with ourselves in nature?
Yeah,
that just feels... Yeah, maybe that's... Yeah, it's all part of whatever this thing is that I'm doing, is finding, I suppose, finding what matters to me. And it isn't what I was led to believe should matter. And I'm still adjusting to that, the idea that owning a home and having a career and having a pension, At times, it's like, God, I wish I had that. That would solve all my problems. I would. But I don't know that it would. If, I suppose it's that, the feeling of certainty and security that whole model of how life should be gives us. But then, yeah, this last 18 months have shaken that up for so many people. And yeah, I just want to go and sit under a tree and be. And that was the thing, my trip to Scotland, I want to do it all because it's such a long way to go once I'm there. But I could just imagine finding somewhere I want to be. And I'll just be there. And it is, when I was traveling in Indonesia, I wanted to be there. I didn't want to go and tick off all the sites and say, oh, well, I went there and I went there and I went there. It's just, I want to stop and experience life, whatever it is. And I thought, sort of, yeah, seeing my judgment around travellers, that I didn't want to mix with travellers. I wanted to commune with the locals, but soon discovered that they're all people and they're all really fascinating and they're all, and just learned so much from all of the people I met, and that people who were off travelling, some were on their own and others were in couples, but they just inspiring in what they were doing, that they weren't sat at home and collecting their material goods. They were out in the world.
Yeah, that's what's the travel thing is interesting. The difference between being a tourist and being a flâneur.
A what? Somebody,
a flâneur.
A flâneur.
A flâneur. It's a French word that we have in Swedish too, which is, you know, you're sauntering down the street and taking in the sights and, you know, not going anywhere, just being. It's that type. Whereas tours is more this, okay, we have the five top sites to see and to check off. And somebody wrote on Twitter about travels and how good it is. And I said, travel can be good. It isn't necessarily good, because there's a lot of that. You go somewhere just to get away from where you are, have, all inclusive in a warmer climate, and, you know, you're just sitting by the hotel pool. It's like, that has, for the individual, it might be precisely what they need, but for the greater good, if we look at climate and pollution and whatnot, it costs a lot. It comes with a huge cost, right? Whereas if it is people, like you say, who go somewhere, find the people there, find the culture there, start to reflect, opening up their own views of the world, and it's like, yes, that has a lot of value. It still has some costs. It still requires, you know, carbon dioxide to fly wherever and all of that, right? But there, at least, there's the opportunity for person-to-person actually meeting. It's like, yes, that type of travel, please. But the, I'm not interested in meeting anybody. I just need to get away. Can we please find some other way to deal with this than kind of messing up the entire climate system of the world by doing it? Which perhaps some people now during COVID have kind of reflected on that. I hope. And others might just be so longing for that release that I guess it is that they get by going to Mallorca for a week and just, you know, just do an all-inclusive at a hotel. You can just get some sun and warmth. And like really not at all interested in what's around you. Except maybe the top five sites that you're supposed to see, right?
Yeah.
The check off.
And it's another thing where we're not aware of the cost. There's so much of that it's that, yeah, it costs X number of pounds to go. But that we're becoming more aware of what the the cost to the planet is, but there's still denial about that. And yeah, it fits with all sorts of things that we're so focused on the financial cost of something that we can't see that there's another cost. And there's so many things like that, that and how disposable all these material possessions that we have, they then break, they don't work anymore, and there's no fixing them. Like my laptop.
Like your laptop.
Can't be fixed because it wasn't built to be fixed. It was built to be lightweight.
And discardable.
Yeah, which just feels disgusting. Disgusting. And then yeah, even with our rubbish, that there's this sort of thing about throwing things away. Like, well, where's away? And there's like, see images of rubbish tips and young children in foreign countries picking over them. But we don't have that here. But we have humongous landfill sites. But we don't think that what we put in our bin goes and sits in landfill for thousands of years. And that recycling has become it's fine because I'm recycling it. So like in the past, we had glass milk bottles, we had glass fizzy pop bottles. They were reused. They didn't have to be remade every time. Yeah. I feel like a grumpy old woman.
That's okay. Now and again, it's really nice to be a grumpy old woman.
So I suppose that it feels like it's all about simple. That,
yeah.
What is it that we actually need in life? And there was something on the radio. They were talking about, what do they call it, the FIRE movement.
Yeah.
Which is about
financially independent, retire early.
Yes. And all these young people so they were talking to people about it and what their strategy was it sort of came down to, well, what is it that you actually want, and what do you need to achieve that? And if what you want is to be able to sit under a tree, that's very different to wanting to have a new super fast car every year and live in a huge house and go on expensive holidays. And yeah, what choice do we make? And that we can make those choices. We can choose to have a simple life.
Mm.
Doesn't have to involve huge sums of money.
I think it's interesting. I have friends. I'm friends with one of the top private finances blogger in Sweden. And he's kind of somewhat allergic to the FIRE concept because of two things, really. One is a lot of people go into it like almost living an anorexic life.
Mm.
You know, cutting down on everything that kind of makes life worth living to save, right? So they are focused on diminishing whatever expenses they have rather than think, okay, how can I make more money? And that way, you know, kind of get that thing that I think that I need. But so that's one thing, because if you've lived for years in that anorectic way of living, once you come Same question as you asked, when will I be finished with my deep dive? How do they know? How will they then start to act? Won't they just keep on? You know, it's like, is that possible to break? You know, it's like, so that's an interesting one. But the other thing is the focus on the retire early, which for me has always meant being able to do whatever it is that I do, which is how can I be of service, not having to bother about, am I getting anything monetary in return for it or not? But there are kind of people in that movement who is like, it is the go live on a tropical island and just live a luxury life, not doing anything to be of service, which I really don't think a lot of people could stand for a long time, because we need to be of service. We need to contribute. I think that's a very, very basic human need. You know, we need to be seen and heard, and we need to contribute. But it's like, it's interesting to you can kind of dip your toes into fire material, and there's a lot of questions that can provide you with some great tankespian. Again, if nothing else, finding out, figuring out, like you said, what matters to me. It's like, how many people ask themselves that?
Because the retire early bit is, it's like, well, if you're doing something you love, why would you want to stop?
Precisely.
So it fits with the, oh, work is this awful thing that I have to do in order to pay the bills that I have to do.
So I'm precisely, so it's like, better build a life that you love, right? It's like, that's the thing to strive for, not financially independent so that I can retire early, not have to do anything. It's like, no, build a life that you want, and if you get to be financially independent, you can play around with a lot more stuff in the however you want it to be, because you don't have to. You're not in that have to, right? Yeah, then you can be in the I have and I want space, and you can just, you know, imagine what you can do from there.
And you can choose that from the beginning if you choose that you're going to have a choice and not be caught up in it. It doesn't have to be. It's not somewhere to be got to, that you don't have to, because the idea that you have this freedom of being retired and financially independent, it's like, well, what is that? But other than this thing in the future, that it sees that, oh yes, in the future I want this. Whereas to actually say, well, what would that look like if I had it now? And so I remember going to some workshop years ago, and they had an icebreaker of, you had to say, if you won £1 million, what would you do? And it was fascinating hearing people talking about the things they would do if they won £1 million. I was sitting there thinking, you could each choose to do that thing now. You can make that.
There's no reason to wait until you get £1 million.
Even that, it fits into the whole culture, doesn't it? That we have to have money. If we have money, then that will solve all our problems. Whereas actually, it's about having. It's about having choice, but it's about being willing to know that you have a choice.
Precisely, being aware that there is a choice.
That we always have a choice, even when we think we don't have a choice. There's always a choice, and to be aware of that, and then to be able to act on that choice, which may bring up shame and all sorts of stuff. Because going back to your yes when you mean yes and no when you mean no, that we're just so messed up by the way we're brought up that this is how it is.
And I was listening to Rika Tillsammans, is the name of my friend's blog and pod, and they had an episode about what do you do when you suddenly come into a windfall of money, you know, inheritance, or you win the lottery, or, you know, there's an exit at the company that you started and you're suddenly stuck with like millions of money. And the best advice you can have, or the best thing you can do, is nothing. You know, put the money in a in an account somewhere, you know, yeah, sure, make sure that you get a few percent, you know, interest in it, but sit tight for a year or two. And then, you know, so you're not reacting, but rather, you know, sit with it, you know, just don't start to do. Because if you do, chances are you're acting from that, I have to, because I have all this money. It's like, chill. Mm. See if you can get into this, I have and I want. From there, what decisions do you make? Which is like, oh, yeah. Because that's not, I mean, somebody who would have said that when asked in that icebreaker session, you know, what would you do if you had £1 million? Like, nothing. I'd put it in a bank account for a couple of years to just sense into it. It was like, what? That would be a really weird answer. But it's a really wise one. To stop you from being up in that, I have to. All of a sudden I can, then I must. No.
Yeah.
Not from that place. But from this deeper place. Ooh, what's there? It's like, there's a lot there. Yeah, it's. I listened to Breda by Paulo Coelho in the beginning of the summer. A book about an Irish witch. But in it, somewhere in it, one of her teachers tells her, clear out your closet. Only have in your closet things that you wear, because there's energy in everything. And if you don't wear it, the energy gets stagnant, and that's not good for you. And I was opening my closet last night to put in a piece of a big sheet for my bed. And I looked at my dresses. It's like, shit. It's like, how many of these sessions have I had this poncho on? Like 90% of them, right? It's like, I'm guessing I could get rid of a lot. And I did. I had a Cleanse for Expansion, Create the Impossible Project in 2015, where I went through everything in the house, barring all of my digital stuff. I didn't get through all of it. I got through a lot of it, but not all. And I didn't get through the old boiler room downstairs here, kind of halfway, and then just the amount of screws or nails that are kind of crooked. You just, oh my God. Yeah. But I'm actually thinking it might be time for one of those again.
Ooh.
You know? Because there's probably stuff that I chose to keep then. Like I'm looking at, I have a little glass shelf with glass window or doors. There's glasses and some good books. How many of those books have I picked out and actually touched since 2015 when I got in there?
Mm.
Not a lot. And from that, I want place. It gets to be something completely different than from this. Oh, I have to keep this one, and I have to keep this one, and I have to do this one. Oh, this one I cannot keep. I must not keep. It's like, yeah. Maybe that's a project to do. But it was hard. I did 90 days of cleaning out, at least doing 15 minutes of clean out and blogging about it. So I have a Cleanse for Expansion blog somewhere on WordPress. And I did. And when I'd done the 90 days, I wasn't done. So I did another 90 days. And that's when I kind of, you know, I ended up with, I hadn't gone through all of the digital files, but I've gone through all of my emails and all of my photos, and, you know, or photos on my phone at least. And I hadn't gone through the boiler room. But then it was like, okay, this is enough.
So did you ever do the boiler room?
No, it's still. No. It's still. But that's the thing. The window, the attic, window, vinden, it's called in Swedish, the attic was jam-packed. So I was away for a weekend and Anders and Benjamin took it down, all of it. So I came home and it was a mountain back here in the living room. Like, literally, you couldn't see across it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, okay, a box today, a box tomorrow. You slowly kind of get that mountain of stuff down, right? But the attic is still not jam-packed. There's a little bit more than it was back then, but it's not nowhere close to what it was. So there is less stuff in the house. I haven't filled it up again as much. So going through all of my stuff again would be an easier task than what it was last time, because I haven't upped it to where I was before I started last time. Not even close. But books, oh man. I got new books from Better World Books the other day, and it's just, I told Dominic yesterday, he's like, I got new books, and he just looked at me and smiled, and I said, I think I might need to take a sabbatical year to just read all the books that I bought this last year. Oh. And I only buy books that I actually think that I want to, you know, do some marginalia and like, I don't buy, you know, chick lit and romance novels and stuff that I know are just to soothe me for the moment and then I won't ever read them again. So I have a lot of books. Mm. I have to read. Or how can I be in that space? Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. It's interesting.
Well, I need to get back to reading Take the Slow Road to Scotland.
When do you plan on leaving?
On the 1st of September.
On the 1st of September. Cool. How long do you plan on being away?
I don't know. I know that I need to be back for my niece's wedding on the 15th of October.
Cool.
But I'll see.
Good.
Yeah. I'm parking all the stuff that's saying
you have to.
You need to do this and you must do that. And nope. Because what I've noticed this week is it's dark in the evenings.
Mm.
By 8:30, it's that, it's getting dark quickly. No, I need to make the most of evenings. Because I remember when I first got my camper van, which was October 2 years ago, and it was right at the end of the October when the clocks changed.
Mm.
wasn't the best planned time. So my first night in a field, well, it was a campsite, but there was no one else there. It was dark.
Pitch black.
5 o'clock. Didn't get light till after 8 the next day. It was. Yeah, that's what happens in the winter. It's like, the summer has just gone so quickly.
Yeah.
So
it does that. Well, good. Enjoy your reading.
I will.
Have a good Sunday.
Yes, you too.